You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is your friendly, one of your hosts, Leon. It is the 19th of July. Yes. Episode 221, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52, who are very trustworthy. They kept my baseball bat there for several weeks when I forgot it when I was there last time.
What?
Yes. I'm a weird and interesting person. Now, normally we have some sort of anecdote or interesting thing to start off the show. I actually don't have anything today because I will be shooting off possibly any second now to go see one of my idols in the man named Mick Foley. So I thought I'd just talk at the start of the show just so people can go, oh, Leon is on this episode, so it's worth listening to. So I don't have anything to say. So how are you all? How is your day? Not you two. I'm talking to the real people out there. Are you well?
Most people in Radioland.
That's good. Are they new shoes? Oh, they look new. Oh, you have worn them for a while. Okay, fair enough. All right, that's me done.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for that, Leon. On top of that, amazing two-way conversation.
Oh, yeah, we're a show about board games, card games, and all that kind of stuff as well.
With our lovely listeners, yes, we are all of those things. We are going to mix things up a little bit because basically it's a great show for you not to be on. It's probably a show that I could not be on as well because it's basically all the mark all the time.
Yeah.
Which is not so good. Except if you like listening to Mark's voice over and over again. Now, he will start with telling us what he's been playing lately, which has been a lot, which will lead us into a little conversation about these SDJ games, otherwise known as the Spiel des Jahres games. Now, it's about to be announced in the not-too-distant future. And then, Mark, you'll tell us all about this lovely weekend you had in Sydney at some gaming convention called LFG. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Well, before we get to that, we say thanks, Area 52, as always. Leon, you will be there in a couple of minutes. We are the Dice Men Cometh. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and here's a song. Wow. That was a relative newcomer in Iron Maiden.
Yeah, they sound relatively new, yeah.
Yeah, if you like their stuff, of which that was called Different World, go check them out. They might have an album or two out, I'm not too sure.
Or 20-odd, it's hard to say.
Anyway, they're not Australian either, but we are. Where the Dice Men Cometh, it is Australia's leading podcast and radio show on tabletop gaming, board games, card games, dice games, and all of those things. And Mark,
yes,
it's your turn to talk about one.
Absolutely. So I, for those who didn't know, have been away in Sydney at a little convention called LFG. Now, you're going to hear a lot about that later on tonight, but the main reason I'm bringing it up now is because I played a game there called Luxor, which is the third and final Spiel des Jahres nominee for 2018. And, of course, I now have played all the Spiel games.
Well, there you go. Do you get a little gold star or a badge?
Yeah,
or
like it's a, what do you get on Steam? It's like an achievement of, yeah. Ching, I've got an achievement. So let me tell you a little bit about Luxor, and then we'll have a quick chat about the Spiel des Jahres, who we think is going to win. So, on the hunt for priceless treasures, groups of adventurers explore the legendary temple of Luxor. Their ultimate goal is the tomb of the pharaoh, but many treasures can be collected as they search. As they explore, the challenge unfolds. The player, who manages to quickly get their team of adventurers to the tomb while salvaging as many treasures as possible, will be the winner. Luxor offers variable gameplay as the path that leads to the tomb is different for every game and will even change during play. So, how Luxor works. Imagine a board.
Okay.
Imagine it. Imagine a game called Talisman.
Ooh.
Where you've got a board that's sort of like a snail shell that moves into the middle of the board. Well, that's what the board for Luxor is like. But basically, all the spots are relatively blank. And then you have a whole bunch of tokens, and you basically fill the whole board, all of these spots, with different tokens. Now, you've got a whole bunch of different tokens. So you've got tokens that just give you victory points. You've got tokens that give you special ability cards. You've got a whole bunch of tokens. So how the game...
I heard at least two types of tokens.
So far, there's tokens, there's a board, and there's cards. I'm hearing that this is a game changer.
Yeah.
This is just innovation written all over it.
No. So remember, it's a very entry-level game. So what you have four adventurers, each player, but you only start off in control of two of them. As you jump over a particular spot, you'll unlock the third And they're the fourth.
Are they ones that were locked inside the temple at Luxor?
Clearly, maybe you call in a helicopter to drop down a third guy or something. I don't know.
A helicopter in a temple of wasn't he in the military? Mm. Didn't he used to jump out
architects.
Of helicopters?
Not architects, archaeologists.
All right, well, keep going.
Anyway, so how you move, this is not a roll and move the game. This is a play a card and move game.
A deck and move.
Yeah, you'll have a hand of five cards. You're only ever allowed to, you're not allowed to shift the order of the cards in your hand, and you can pick from either end. So you'll have a choice of two cards. You might move one, two, three, four, five spots, I think is the maximum, and then there's a couple of like special cards. And then at the end of your turn, you'll draw back and you'll put that card right in the middle of your hand.
Yes, because you'll always have five. So once you've removed one, there's four, which means you have to always put that card right in the middle of those two and two, yeah?
That's the rules.
Perfect.
Okay.
And that is arguably the most unique aspect to this game. Is that right?
Well, the other thing is the fact that these tokens are going down, the game board is always different.
That's not unique.
Potentially not.
But I really do hope that the term deck and move does take off.
So the thing with some of the tokens, the let's call them treasure tokens, is you need more than one adventurer to unlock them. So what you've got to do is you've got to get two, sometimes three, I don't know if there was any four ones, on the tile before you then get to basically take the tile or flip the tile over and see what it is, get a special card maybe, get some victory points via a scarab token, get a key that unlocks the very central tomb.
Or also set collection bonuses. And that's why
yes. A
lot of these tiles are actually, they're sort of multi-purpose, I guess. They will tell you the number of meeples that you need to have on that tile to claim it. And
yes. Obviously
you need to have two or three of your type before anyone else gets two or three of their own type on mm-hmm. There. They'll also have certain symbols. You might have the scarab, or I think there's a snake. There's probably a cat on there as well, being
yes. The
Egypt theme. And you will get rewarded points for having larger sets of the same type of card.
Yeah, yeah. So there's three different cards to collect. You can also get wild tokens, which help you get more sets. There's some special tiles, which can unlock like a tunnel, which is sort of like a snakes and ladders thing, or at least the ladder, where you can jump on a tile and then pop out somewhere else on the board further up.
Yeah, there are cards that might allow you to, instead of always going deeper and deeper into this particular tomb, you can go back the other way. There are ones that allow you to go plus one or minus one. There are quite a bit of variability in there, and there is also then three decks of the Eye of Horus.
Yes.
Where you can sort of fatten up your hand, or at least add slightly more powerful versions
of
cards.
Yeah, get more advanced versions. And some of those include, for example, if a tile says you need three adventurers to get that treasure tile, your card might have minus one adventurer. So it lets you move, and then you need one less adventurer to unlock it. So look, it's a fun little movement game with lots of sort of variable board. You're playing to get the most victory points. The first two people or two meeples in the center basically get a bonus that you get in the middle.
Like a sarcophagus.
That's right. And you on the way, you've got to grab a key, which basically just a case of one of the turns where you get a Horus card. Instead of taking that, you'd get a key instead. So it's not a really biggie. Look, I have to admit, I played with two players. It probably took about, for a learning game, about 45 minutes maximum.
Oh, wow.
I have to give a big shout out to Alan, who was the LFG volunteer that taught me, because I was really keen to play this game, just so we could compare and contrast for the spiel. I have to say, I was quite surprised by how much fun I had, because certainly from seeing it online and hearing about it, I was thinking this was going to be Camel Up, Camel Cup all over again, like a game I cannot stand and just could not see why people liked it.
Well, it's by Rüdiger Dorn. So, I mean, he's done a fair few games. I mean, he did Karuba a couple of years ago and he did Montana.
Yep.
Which I don't like. But that was a last year release. But he certainly had a hell of a lot of big games.
He punches out a lot of games.
Yeah.
I remember I played Jambo, which is one of his very earlier releases. Anyway, I guess I had more fun than I expected to have with it. And look, it is a beginner's level game, that's for sure. But is it a Spiel des Jahres winner?
Well, I don't know yet. It's certainly nominated. And that's the first thing is, it sounds fun. You're the only one who, out of the three of us, who has played it.
Yep.
I watched the Dice Tower. I watched the Board Game Geek. No, what the other guy? Anyway, a few of the different reviews. And look, the overall message I got was, it's not particularly new, it's not particularly exciting, it's very much little bit of tactical, a little bit of skill, but a hell of a lot of luck. Because you, although you've technically got five choices in your hand in your deck of five, you've only really got two choices because you can only ever pick the most most extreme left or the most extreme right.
And you don't have any ability to manipulate that hand.
No.
It's just, okay, you've got two choices each time.
So, look, I'd certainly play it if it was offered to me. Does it hold any particular interest? No, not at all. The theme is cool. I mean, Egypt is a really cool, interesting theme, and there's a lot of history in there. I've been to Luxor, so I can imagine myself playing it there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't excite me, I must say. And I don't know. It's just, again, in that regard, very Spiel-worthy, because a lot of the Spiel in the last few years have been a bit ho-hum.
Well, look, it's definitely a beginner's-level game. I can definitely see you sitting down with a family that haven't played many games, and they would definitely have fun with this. So I can see the justification for it being, at least in the pile of games they're considering, is it better than maybe some of the other recommended lists, like 5-Minute Dungeon, Majesty for the Realm, Santorini?
Well, Mark, you've played all those other three.
Yes.
Are all those other three better than Luxor? Because they sound it.
Well, Majesty for the Realm, I don't know. Yeah, probably I'd say yes.
5-Minute Dungeon is a game that I think has serious mass appeal, and I'm surprised that actually that didn't get up, because I think with a right amount of backing behind it, that game could sell.
Yeah, it's really fun, really
cooperative. It's really fun, it's an interesting gimmick, and it looks good, which is pretty much all you need.
Yeah.
Well, let's switch the conversation to the SDJ, to the Spiel, because you've played all three. Leon and I, we've played two of them each. We've played...
No, I haven't. I didn't play the what's it called, the mind. I just watched you guys play it. And
that's good.
So I've played one of them.
You've played one.
But I still have opinions, even though that they're not valid.
Well, let's start with yours then, and then we'll get better and better as the show progresses.
Okie doke. Well, for me, the obvious winner would be Azul, because it's made the biggest impact on, from what we can see, the gaming hobby to us. However, I think it's a three-horse race in the sense that I could see any of these winning, but for different reasons. The mind is obviously, I don't know necessarily it's innovative, but it's different. It is thinking outside the box, which is an important thing. And then Luxor, it is kind of ho-hum and plain, but the reason I think it could win is because the other two sell themselves. Mm-hmm. Anybody that knows anything about board games has probably heard of Azul, and especially in somewhere like Germany, where your average person knows more about board games than your average person here, they probably know about Azul, so they will sell easy. Also, it looks nice. It's a cool-looking box. It's an easy-to-play game. Whereas The Mind, it's got a cool little bunny art thing on the cover, and it costs like £20. So that alone, you put that on a counter, it's going to sell.
And that's an important point, because they do quite clearly say they want it to be moving off the shelves.
Yes.
You know, this is about getting into primarily German households with German families.
If you want to make money, like the most amount of money out of these three games, you put the award on Luxor because that's the one that needs it. Ooh. So in that sense, I think it's anybody's game. To me, the logical sense would be Azul, but like I said, the financial way, it could be Luxor, but the innovation, it could be... I've literally just given you nothing.
Correct. So I'm going to write down, what is your official... pick?
Luxor.
Okay. All right. There we go.
Leon, go with the money.
Luxor.
Always go with the money.
It's Garth? Written in blood now.
You want to go next?
Not really, but I will. Very strong argument there, Leon. I'm very impressed. But look, with the mind, it is such a polarizing game. There is either the camp that loves it or either the camp that hates it. And never the twain shall meet.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones that, look, if we had to sit down and play it again and again and again, then maybe eventually it would become fun, but that's not enough of a selling point for me. However, if it's a 50-50 split, then every two copies of that sell, someone's going to love it and tell all their friends. And they'll tell people, you should buy this and you should buy this and you should buy this, whereas the one person who wasted their $10 or $20 on the game didn't like it will just... throw it in the corner and never use it again. They're not necessarily going to tell as many people as those who loved it.
Yeah.
Now, Azul is beautiful and it is abstract and it's fun and it's fast and it plays well with two, three or four players. Personally, Azul is a much better game, of course, but I think you could have a point, Leon, with the fact that the judges want to think outside the box, so to speak, and put it into our minds. So I guess I'll have to go for the mind.
Oh.
I'll have a shower after this because I feel dirty saying it.
Oh, you're a bad person.
But I'll go for the mind.
Well, one of the interesting things for me, when we talked about the Kenner Spiel, we talked about the Board Game Geek complexity rating.
Mm-hmm.
Azul is rated 1.83, so this is out of 5. Luxor, interestingly, is rated 2.0, which I wouldn't have said Luxor was more complicated or more complex than Azul, and the mind is rated 1.08, so very, very simple.
Oh, but there's still the concept of the mind. I think that alone would kind of confuse people, because
yeah.
Azul, I played with two other people that had played it already, and we played Azul in 15 minutes. I think it was less, it was like 12
yeah.
minutes, and I don't think you could do that with, probably not Luxor, maybe. Well,
definitely
and
not.
And
yeah.
the mind, unless you once you knew the game already, you could sit down and do it.
But the thing
seconds,
with Azul, yeah. though, is that there's relatively long-term planning. You can plan out to some degree where the mind, gosh, it's the dog's breakfast, and with Luxor, it doesn't. You can have a plan, a little one, but then someone can just put their archaeologists or their adventurers on it and steal your one idea that you were able to do. So I reckon there's all these the most complicated.
You've also got to think in terms, like I said before, the financial benefits is expansion-wise. Does the mind, can you even expand that game?
Yes, because there are higher numbers than 100.
Well, not fair enough. And Azul, and there's already a game that's a sequel to Azul coming out soon.
The Stained Glass one.
So does that mean Azul's not going to get an expansion, whereas Luxor might have one in the pipework, so that alone could push it to maybe get in.
Azul has the other side of the player board where you play with the grey board that gives you more flexibility. Look, I'm going to buck the trend. I'm going to go for Azul because I do think it's a modern classic. I think it has staying power. I think it's beautiful. It's lovely to touch. And I think it's something that you could see every German family could justify having it in their home.
So beautiful, lovely to touch. All Germans want one in their home.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
There we go.
But, you know, look, I have to say, when I interviewed Matthew Dunstan, the Australian designer, the other day, he was thinking, and I'm sure when I eventually play my interview, he was thinking that the mind, for that exact reason of they want to encourage the different thought about what a board game actually is. So
we've all got a different horse in the race.
Yes.
So we have to make this interesting. What are we going to say? Are we going to say that? How are we going to do this?
A round of beers.
Round of beers.
Round of beers. Okay.
And because the thing is that this is announced on.
Well, two pints to the winner, basically.
Yep.
I think this is announced on Monday or Tuesday, the 23rd in Germany.
Okay.
So by the time this podcast comes out, it will either have been judged or be about to. So it'll be locked in stone what our answers were.
Yeah. Well, they already are. I've written them down.
There
on
you
this
go. And we picked one each. So amazingly. Okay. Now we've got lots to talk about tonight.
Yes. I'm going to leave you, fine people, because I have to go and meet one of my heroes. But it was lovely talking to you all as always. So yeah, lovely. Miss you. Bye.
Bye. See you, Leon.
Bye.
Well, there you go. That was the Gorillaz with Don't Get Lost in Heaven. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Mark's just come back from a wonderful weekend of gaming in Sydney at the LFG convention. Mark, you talked to a fair few people. We haven't got much time, so push the button and hear all those conversations you had.
Hello, everyone. It's the end of a long day where I've been at work. I've got a car ride to the airport, I've got on the plane, which was delayed, and then I've got an Uber from Sydney Airport out to Bankstown, to the Bankstown Sports Centre. Or should I say the Bankstown Sports Centre Metropolis. This place is amazing. It's massive. There's pubs, clubs, bars, restaurants, and the Grand Ballroom. And what's in the Grand Ballroom, you say? It's LFG. Now, it's about midnight on Friday night. I've just arrived. I've popped in to say good day to Charles and all the LFG team, including Renee, who's here, our great friend from BorderCon, demoing some games. And who should be there but Martin Wallace. Had a quick chat to him. He's got a couple of prototypes here that he's shopping around. So hopefully I might get to try one or two of those tomorrow. But for now, I'm going to head off to bed, get up tomorrow morning, and be ready for 2 days of gaming fun at LFG Sydney 2018. Woohoo! All right, so I've had my first game of LFG, and suck it, Leon, it's Terraforming Mars. I'm here in Sydney. I've played a game with two guys from Newcastle and two guys from Canberra. I'm going to go around the table and see what you think and why Leon is missing out on this great game. Richard.
Well, I think Leon would have really enjoyed seeing you representing Tasmania, being the absolute tree hugger with a ton of forests on Mars.
And well, almost pulled off the win.
Almost pulled off the win. One point in it. One point in it.
There's a go.
Very close.
Well, we all know it's not easy being green.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've got the base game of Terraforming Mars, so this is the expansion. We played what map? Elysium. We played the Elysium map. It's really interesting. Like this, the desert down the bottom. Like nobody went there. It was really sort of different sort of board layout, and the awards are different too. So I like the variety in that. So I might have to think about picking this one up.
Brilliant. And this was with the Venus expansion and the Elysium expansion, wasn't it?
I really like with Terraforming Mars how you've got a lot of choices about whether you're focusing on the board or your cards or like upgrading your resources and all those sorts of things. I think there's a lot of variety in that. And yeah, the expansions with the milestones changing the awards makes a lot of variety in the game.
And how do you feel about beating me by one point?
Pretty good. Stealing those plants off you at the very end with the asteroids was, pretty rewarding.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, guys. So here I am with Damien and Riley from Slinky Gibbon Games. Now, they have absolutely smashed it out of the park on Kickstarter with I Am the Fourth Wall. Guys, you must be so excited.
It was really... it was a great opportunity to just kind of get a bit of a larger game going. We released Ultimate Patrol last year.
Yes.
It was just kind of small sort of things, but then we're like, okay, next project, big thing, let's kind of push the boundaries of it.
And you raised, I think it was $86,000?
$86,000, yes.
And what was your target?
13.
There you go. Absolutely amazing. Where are you at now? What are you up to now? You're obviously here showing the game to people, but where are you at in the delivery of the Kickstarter process?
So it's mainly art at the moment.
Yep.
So we've been doing quite a bit of playtesting and stuff like that, but the main sort of thing is finish off the art and then getting it off to
the factories, just get it pumping out.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. Yeah, because you guys were so kind to send us a pre-production copy, which we played, and that had obviously a lot of placeholder art.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
But some of the cards and some of the pictures we've seen of the art, it's looking amazing. Who are your artists?
That would be me.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of work to get through. But yeah, it's smashing through it at the moment. It's been a style that I've been working on for a little while.
Yeah.
It's great to experiment with my own sort of thing.
Wow.
It's been a lot of fun.
Lovely. And what's the response been here at LFGO? Obviously, it's only early days this morning, but...
Yeah, it's been good so far. I've had quite a few people played it. All of them enjoyed it. They enjoy how difficult it is, how actually competitive it can get, unlike some games which are... You know, I mean, there's a lot of cooperative here. There's a lot of people enjoying it, and I'm just not here for that, am I?
Well, I mean... That was our... I think our only complaint about this game was we just got smashed by Cthulhu every single time.
Yeah, he does that.
And
Cthulhu's
that had us
gross.
Thinking, you know, are we playing it wrong or something? And no, it was just we weren't good at it.
It's just a tricky game.
Look, congratulations, guys. It's been amazing. Obviously, it's coming out...
Should be with everybody by January, February next year.
Yeah. So definitely eligible for a Kanga Award next year.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Well, have a great con. We'll see you guys around.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So I'm here at LFG with the guys from Story Brewers. I've got Haley and V. Now, some of you listening might remember I spoke about Alas for the Awful Sea, which is an amazing RPG on Kickstarter. Now they've also had Good Society, the Jane Austen RPG. You guys have been absolutely smashing it out of the park on Kickstarter. What's your secret?
Probably a lot of enthusiasm and a great theme.
Yeah, well, it's really, I mean, both the themes are really different in role-playing because, you know, you get so many dungeon themes, space themes, even pirates and things, but you've got Jane Austen. And Alas for the Awful Sea, drama
absolutely.
On the whole sea.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, look, we love to make games about the themes that interest us, particularly games that aren't there already. If there's already a game there about something that we love, then we go and play it. But where that's lacking, then that's when we're inspired to step in and create these games for ourselves and for other people to enjoy as well.
I think also we're seeing, like, diversity in themes, diversity in character. Fantastic to see the two of you here. Amongst the board gamers, they're not too scary, are they?
Not at all. Yeah, I think we're seeing a rise in the importance of storytelling in role-playing games in general, and our games really reflect that. They're very story-focused and story-first, so...
Fantastic.
Yeah. I would say that helps in sort of getting people's buy-in into role-playing games as well, because I feel like they've got a lot more control about the narrative and the stories they're telling. So it's been really great to see that.
And you, I feel like, just from the little bit I know about your products, like you're moving away from the rules-heavy RPGs, and it's actually all about being able to dive in and experience the story rather than spending an inordinate amount of time creating characters and rolling dice. Is that right?
The mechanics that we do have in our games, we try to make them very accessible to someone who would love that theme. So with our Janelson game, sort of the structure of the game lets people, say, have monologues, inner monologues, where they, as characters, will reveal their secret desires. Or, there's a postulatory phase where you're writing letters, and that's like a mechanic, but it's very accessible. So that's sort of the kind of thing we try and focus on in our games.
Yeah, sort of rules that draw you into the story rather than creating a barrier to play and time that you have to stop and think about them.
Can you tease us about any upcoming products you might have? I mean, I know you've got plenty here, but, you know, what's on the storyboard?
Yeah, so the Good Society, the Jane Austen RPG, we, as part of the Kickstarter, had two expansions. We have Sense, Sensibility and Swordsmanship.
Ooh.
And we've also got Pride, Prejudice and Practical Magics.
Not Pride, Prejudice and Zombies.
No. That one's been done before.
It could go there.
Hey, there's always room for more, isn't there?
Yeah, so we're working on those at the moment, and those are going to be really exciting. Yeah.
Well, look, it's been lovely to meet you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thanks very much.
So Nathan from Lost Treasure Games, you're here at LFG with your game coming to Kickstarter soon, War of Supremacy.
That's correct.
Very exciting time because you're about to get back on Kickstarter.
Yes. We're looking to get back after our unfortunate cancellation in February. We're looking at July 24th, so just in a few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So very excited.
I've been seeing lots of new art on Facebook.
Yes.
It's all very exciting. The game is looking amazing now.
Thank you.
We loved it. Leon in particular absolutely loved this game when we played it.
Yes.
Have you made any major changes from the game we saw before?
So gameplay-wise, nothing really changing. But in terms of components, we've added this new nice board to place all your cards on. We've also added a new faction to the core set.
Oh.
The Dread is now coming. They have a lot of graveyard kind of mechanics.
Yes.
If we fund within the first 2 days on Kickstarter, we're adding another faction on top of that, the Blood. So a few other little helps, so some reference cards and a few other things that just general quality of life changes to the game.
Beautiful. And now, obviously, people don't have long to wait.
No.
I'm really excited to see this game back on Kickstarter because we loved it. So, look, hope you have a great con this weekend.
Thank you very much.
And all the best for the upcoming Kickstarter, Nathan.
Thank you. You too.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
So, it's welcome again to Kim Brayback from Good Games Publishing. You're here at LFG.
Hello.
You're looking pretty busy over there, Kim. What are you up to?
Well, we're demoing two of our upcoming games. We've got our first expansion for Unfair, which has four new theme packs in it.
Oh.
Which, that's going to be Aliens, B-Movies, Dinosaur and Western.
Oh, Dinosaur, that's very timely.
Yeah, I know. It's by happenstance, I think, more than anything. Okay. We got the timing on that one.
Yeah.
So those four decks you add into the existing six decks with the original Unfair, and you get just crazy through the replayability.
Because there's already half a dozen, was it, in the base game?
Six in the base game, and we worked out the numbers the other day. If you had a four-player game with the six decks, you get 15 different variations.
Wow, okay.
That you could normally play the game with those different decks. But when we add in the extra four, it knocks up out of 10.
Yeah.
You're up at 200 variations you could play the game with.
So endless replayability.
I think that's the right term, endless replayability, and it's almost true.
Cool.
Yeah. So we're excited about that. It kind of slightly ups the power level of some of the decks. So you've got alien technology, you've got the high risk reward of dinosaurs. Western allows you to build six attractions, possibly two super attractions, pumping at the same time to do kind of insane combos. And B-Movies activates the panoramic cards that were in the base game, but they're just kind of for show there.
Okay.
We had them as there as kind of Easter eggs. And so now if you get the panorama attractions from one particular theme lined up in the correct sequence, you'll score points out of that at the end of the game.
Nice.
And there's various ways to make that happen as well.
And does that mean the art all lines up as well?
Oh, art all lines up. And, you know, that's always been buried in the game. We didn't really amp that too high when we talked about the original game. It was more like an Easter egg that people could discover, going, hey, look, my picture's joined.
Nice.
And then you see the little tiny icon on the bottom of the card. And now we've basically brought that to life with some scoring around it. Yeah. So, yeah, Joel's like that. He thinks ahead about 5 years,
okay.
Which is good.
And then now you've got a game there that I know we were excited about when we saw it at PAX last year.
Yep.
That one is?
Guildmaster.
Yeah.
So in Guildmaster, you're the master of a fantasy guild, and you're trying to be the most famous guild in the city. You're going to basically recruit new adventurers that are increasingly powerful and try and send them out in teams to go and attempt and conquer contracts to get fame, money, and bonus rewards that are often quite different from each other. They give you some kind of extra control over the game and advantages for later on in the game or immediate advantages. Now, comboing those with the adventurers you've got and trying to find the best mix of things allows you to kind of try to get the upper hand in the game.
You get better adventurers as you go.
That's right. Yeah, you start off with sort of cheapy novice guys that are just barely capable of doing rats in the basement or whatever. Like
Joe Warrior kind of with his one dagger.
That's right. Now, the game's got simultaneous action planning, so you've got to send teams of people out in secret behind a screen. You order what everybody's going to do, and then everybody reveals at the same time, and you're all going for a mix of about 10 or 12 things in the game at any given time.
Yes.
And so when you won't get everything you want, but if you prioritize well, you'll get the things that you want the most.
Yes.
And if you prioritize really well, maybe with a little bit of luck, you'll get more than your fair share of stuff. But when you overlap with other people, you can choose to cooperate with them to do that thing or conflict on that thing. So there's a lot of space for negotiation in the game. So if two players are trailing in the points tally in fame, and they happen to go for the same thing, there doesn't have to be a loser.
Okay.
Like both of them can share the rewards. They'll get less money, but they get the same full fame amount either. So we've really tried to make the politics a real part of the game.
Okay.
You also get rewards for contracts, and you can put the rewards out for tender, so to speak, and say, I've got two fame to offer, I'm going to get one as well.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to pay me two coins, I'll give them the two fame.
Okay.
So you can start to just try and curry favour with the other guilds.
So it sounds like it's changed up a bit from when we played it at PAX.
We've really focused on trying to remove or soften the pain points as much as possible and increase the negotiation so that it's very difficult to have two bad turns in a row because you can always negotiate your way back into stuff. And if you got a little bit of payoff of things here or there, you can do things that help keep you up in the game.
So okay.
Lately, we've been noticing people might be like 15 points behind or something in the mid game, but by the end game, they can catch up. And it's not just soft catch up mechanisms. You have to earn them by negotiating your way into them. If you put a good case, then you can catch up.
So now both of them coming to Kickstarter?
Yeah. Unfair Expansion is coming to Kickstarter on July the 23rd. That's very
soon. Wow, very shortly.
Yeah. And that's going to be a short campaign of about 17 days. So if you're a fan of Unfair or you want to give it a try, you want to get in on that early, we will be offering the base game as well as part of a bundle.
I thought so,
if you want to get both at once because you missed the first train, then that's good. We're pretty much sold out of Unfair around the world.
Wow, that's great work.
Yeah, thanks. It's been good so far.
And then Guildmaster?
Guildmaster's August the 27th.
Ooh, we're still not far away.
Not far away.
Gee.
All is insane, but we want to kind of, we've got some strategies around this. Like we want to get stuff out as early as possible, but there's a rush on Kickstarter in September when all the Americans get back from their summer holidays.
Yeah.
All the other guys tend to go, it's 1st of September, we've got to launch our Kickstarter we've been saving up for 3 months.
Yeah, and I guess also you've got so much gets launched now at Gen Con in August, so there's the rush of that. So to get in before that is a great idea.
I think we can run a campaign over Gen Con, but it needs to be in the middle, and that's kind of what we got. So we'll get some extra buzz out of Gen Con and just get some publicity there. But, I mean, we know we've got a bunch of loyal fans of Unfair.
Yeah.
We had like 100 different playtest groups.
So, and I mean, because it's got such great following, then obviously you can leverage off that with those people towards Guildmaster as well.
Hopefully. So we'll try and build on the Unfair base. And we've added in new things with Unfair that, you know, if people had an issue with Unfair, it was usually around the fact that somebody could do something mean to them.
Yes.
Fair enough. If they really don't like that.
Tom, what's your name? Go and play another game,
We've got new ways for people to mitigate that kind of stuff.
Okay.
You know, insurance policies. Unfair's got the last four events that come up are kind of bad for everybody in variable ways, depending on how you built your park. So you can mitigate that as you play, as an experienced player. You can go, well, just in case that's in the deck, I'm going to build this way. And smart, experienced players can do that. Some players, probably on their first game, if they dived in the deep end and played with not the normal mix of decks that we recommend, or maybe some really bad stuff happened by happenstance in their first game, might just think the game's all about that. But those kind of things, really damaging things, are pretty rare. So we've added in like a game changer that allows you to see the events that are coming up one turn ahead.
Yeah.
You know all of them, but you get to see that one. It gives you time to go, oh my God, there's a storm coming my way. I've got to bunker down and prepare for this and find a solution.
I mean, that's reasonable, but I mean, look, I know
we loved how harsh and how brutal it was, and how backstabby. But I mean, that's us. But I mean, surely a lot of people do.
Yeah, and that's what we've heard, is that people go, no, no, don't soften it. We love the fact that it's like harsh, and you have to overcome adversity to win in the game. That's why it's different to other games.
So
we're proud of the way it is, but we keep hearing from people like, I'll play this with my wife.
Yeah.
She doesn't like being attacked, so we use the World Peace card.
Yes.
And now she loves the game, and I get to play a game with my wife. That is what we want.
Like,
flexibility for people to play it as widely as they can across their play groups. Tune the game to their group's liking.
Yep.
So you might have a game with your mates where you're hacking into everybody and you love that. But you might play an intro game with some people who you know maybe don't like that and play it a different way to ease them into the game. It adds a little bit of complexity in terms of having to think about the options that you want to add. But once you understand the game, it's just more options.
Yeah, brilliant. So busy time for you coming
up. Very, very busy time. Yeah, I'm going to have like 2 straight months of Kickstarters back to back.
Anything else coming down the chain you can tease us about?
Yeah, we've got a game that we're likely to publish early next year called Drift Kings at the moment.
Oh, yes. We played a demo of that at BorderCon earlier. Excellent.
How'd you enjoy that?
Yeah, well, I didn't play it personally, but my partners did. Yeah, absolutely. They loved it. In fact, I'm hoping I might even get a game of it tomorrow.
James is here.
Yes.
So, I'd advise that. I'll give you a game.
Yeah, please.
The thing that excites us about that is fantastic table presence. It's racing and drift racing, so you can earn some extra points that you can do tricks with by drifting.
Yeah, those little templates look really cool for like going around a corner and everything.
The template system it's got is unique. And the first time I played it, I was like, wow, this is like carved out of stone.
Yeah.
How does this not exist already? I suppose the closest equivalent would be like a Wings of War or X-Wing movement system, but it's also not exactly like that. You're just playing off length of your driving versus the turning circle. So if you're in fifth gear, you get a longer tile, but it doesn't turn very hard. Whereas in second gear, you're going to get a little short distance, but you can turn really hard.
Okay.
So it's all about handling. So as soon as we played that, we're like, this is like the most realistic simulation of a racing experience that I could imagine playing. And I've played all the other racing games around. They all do interesting things.
Yeah.
They abstracted from that fundamentals of distance versus control.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about that. And a lot of people play it that I wouldn't have expected to enjoy it, and they just get the game straight away and enjoy it a lot. So we think that's got to be a candidate for being up there as a good quality racing game.
Consider
if they want the realism. And I don't think there's another game on the market.
No, I know when Garth and Leon played it, they said the same thing. There's nothing really like it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's exciting time for you guys.
Very good.
Thanks so much, and keep up the great work.
No worries. Thanks, Mark. See you later.
So there you go. That was part one of Mark's LFG report. We better throw to a song, Mark, and then we'll come back with part two. You with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
Hello, everyone. Sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support the Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month, and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts, and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
No.
Well, there you go. That was Kings of Leon with Four Kicks. You're at the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Mark, have you got your finger on the button?
Oh, yes.
For your LFG report.
Part two.
Sunday afternoon here at LFG, and David Harding, you've been so kind.
Yes.
Give me a few minutes before you head off home after a big weekend. How have you been, and what have you been up to?
Well, thank you. Yes, I am very kind. I've been up to a lot of things. Firstly, this weekend, it's been fantastic. So this is my third LFG here at Bankstown, but it's definitely this was the best one so far. Bigger, buzzier, great games to play, to try. Just had a good time.
And at the Protospiel, have you unearthed any gems?
Protospiel was a two-day-long thing for game designers, and I don't know how many there were, a dozen maybe. Just then they finished off today with Martin Wallace, myself, and Charles from LFG going around getting their pitches, and it was fun.
Okay.
I've done that three times, and I think every year the designs have been better. So, and they're different people.
Yes.
So we're just growing, I think, as a country and as a nation and as a country.
Well, it's so fantastic, and you've been leading the charge of Australian game design and publishing. So you're continuing to lead that charge. Where are you charging off to in the next 6 to 12 months in terms of games?
Okay, where do I start?
Oh, and you've obviously just had Boomerang, which was a success on Kickstarter.
So Boomerang on
congratulations.
Kickstarter. Yeah, so that'll be out probably by the end of the year. So a little Aussie game that could by an American. Scott Arms designed that one. But it's a card drafting game, and it's awesome. Little, quick, fun, beautiful, fantastic, excellent. Everyone should buy 20 copies. But before all that, so Kashgar, which was originally put out in German, but Grail just has done the English version.
Yeah.
That's just coming out now-ish, this week maybe. And Crisscross, the little roll and write from Kenichi, is just coming out.
Jump, jump?
Jump, jump. No. So purposefully it's spelt with C's, not K's.
Sure.
Because the jump, jump is with the K's.
Yes.
If people don't know what we're talking about, don't look at it. But Gen Con, in a couple of weeks, I'll be there pushing Yellow and Yangtze, which is the sequel to Tigris and Euphrates. Hopefully that goes really well.
Yeah.
And then that'll release after Gen Con. And
have you got global rights for that?
No, but other people might. But if you speak English, don't worry about that.
Okay.
Just buy the Grail Games edition.
As long as you've got the North American rights,
Oh, yeah. Buy a few copies. No, but it's a great game. Beautiful. Vincent de Trade art again. And let me think. Oh, and then Stevenson's Rocket will be out in a month or two. It's a reprint of a Kinetia classic with Ian O'Toole art. It's been held up by the factory. Their fault. Sorry about that. But it's looking sweet as, mate.
Fantastic.
And then next year, oh, don't worry about next year. But next year there might be a couple. Okay, we'll talk about next year.
Yeah.
Watch me. There'll probably be a couple more Kinetia games, new ones.
Ooh.
A couple more reprints and a couple more little Aussie games that could by Australian designers.
Fantastic. Yeah. You're doing it all. You got it all going on.
I am a Renaissance man.
You are. Thank you so much, David. Great to catch up with you again.
Thank you, and enjoy your stay in Sydney. Bye.
So here we are. It's almost the end of the weekend, Charles, at LFG 2018 in Sydney. I'm going to give you my impressions in a minute, but what have you thought?
I felt yesterday that I had run a successful expo for the first time in 7 years. We've had a long history with Toy and Game Expo, LFG, Sydney, and I feel like over the years we've operationally delivered.
Yeah.
But yesterday there was a vibe in the room and a feel in the room that was just awesome. It really felt like it all came together.
Yeah.
People made it happen yesterday. The people in the room made it happen.
Yeah.
And I think once you hit that sweet spot, then it's only up and onwards from there.
For me, there was a great buzz yesterday. You had open gaming going off. There was so much interest in the indie booths, in the game companies, the competitions. I went down to the Game Design Masterclass, and obviously the room was full there. You had the Protospiel, you had the RPGs. Everything was happening, and this was my first experience here. Yeah, I agree totally. There was a real buzz that this was something, absolutely.
And I think Sydney's been looking for something for a long time. I think Sydney's wanted a convention around Euro games. I know it's got a couple of wargaming conventions, but it really has been looking for that. And I think the contribution of the Sydney gamers to the games library and the commitment of people like Chris Whale and Craig Summerton and John Rothstein, who've been coming year after year, the De Silvers, is the start of the city committing to this convention.
Yeah, and I played games with people from Canberra, people from Wollongong, people from Newcastle. So you clearly, you know, it's not just Sydney, you're drawing in people from outside as well. Hey, I came from Tasmania.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. I mean, most of my volunteers are actually from Canberra.
Yeah.
Family, friends and crew that have been roped in. I mean, it was nice to hear the hall last night spontaneously give them a round of applause at 5:30 when we said, look, we're giving them a break so they can go off at night. And people just started to clap and cheer. And it was like, that's a sign that people are committed and people are really enjoying themselves. So, yeah, it was a very satisfying moment to feel that. Because it's about feel. This is the thing. Games are about feel. They're not about dollars or money or things. They're actually about the social. You can hear it in the background.
Yeah, that's right. We're still having fun now.
Yeah, they're about feel. And yesterday the feel was good. And you know what? Today, Sunday, was normally a quieter day.
Yes.
It's nearly 5 o'clock and it's still buzzing in the hall on a Sunday. To me, that's as much an endorsement. We've had a lot more families through today as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a good day.
And I think, I mean, my message to Sydney gamers who are here is spread the word amongst your friends and family, because this has been absolutely awesome. Can only get better next year. I presume you're coming back?
Yeah, look, we're going to take a 3-year deal. The interesting thing for us is I reckon we need to cap our numbers at about 600.
Okay.
I think with more than that, you start to run into problems.
Yes.
So we'll actually be next year. I think we had about 400 to 450 on a Saturday. I haven't done the exact count yet. But that only gives us space for another 150 on a Saturday before I think we have to shut the doors so that people have a comfortable experience.
Yeah.
It'll be tight with 600, but this isn't like a supernova where you can walk past things to get the experience. You have to be able to sit and get the experience. So that's where we're at, is we need to get that number right, and I think it's not far off.
Yeah.
So we'll be opening tickets early next year. I think you need to get in to get your tickets.
It's going to be on my calendar for next year as well.
So what were your highlights for the weekend?
Oh, look, I loved getting to meet the guys who did the Alas for the Cruel Sea RPG.
Okay, yep.
And the Jane Austen RPG, because I'd spoke about them on the show. Yep. To meet them and, like, really encourage them for the product was awesome. I got to play Luxor, which was the one Spiel game that I haven't played.
Yep.
So now I can actually talk about all the Spiel games.
Yep.
I met some people I've never met before. They were so nice to me, like they were listeners, played games with me, had a meal with them, had a meal with Martin Wallace.
Yep.
That was great. So I've played games, I've talked to people, I've just had a really great time. I don't think I can pick one highlight. It's just been a weekend of highlights.
Yeah, nice. Well, that's what we're trying to achieve. And I think this weekend, I feel like we've pulled it off. I can't explain to people what the Bankstown Sports Club's like, because I can guarantee you in your mind, you're currently thinking your local RSL or equivalent.
It is like Las Vegas in Sydney. It really is.
And it is just the food choices, the free car parking, the quality of the ballroom, etc., is just out of sight.
I don't think you could find a better location.
No, and that's one of the things. I mean, you hit 600 people, well, logic then says you go to a bigger location.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think it might be hitting 600 people and then holding at 600 people. I don't know, but that's for the future. So I'm getting ahead of myself a bit now.
No worries.
It's time to have a sleep tonight and pack up first, and have sleep tonight, and tomorrow's another day.
Well, look, thanks so much for having me, and look, congratulations on an amazing con.
Look, you're welcome, and I think things like your podcast are critical to the long-term growth of this industry, so that's why I wanted to work with you guys, to have you here, to, you know, have the opportunity to work together, because I'm sure we've got SN Unplugged coming up in the 23rd to the 25th of November in Canberra. So tickets will be up for that shortly, and that's for hardcore gamers. That's we fly to Essen and bring back the latest stuff we can and drop it in the East Lake Football Club so you can torture yourself for a weekend. It's building that industry, building the proto spiels, building the game design workshops, all of which makes this long-term sustainable for all of us.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Charles.
No worries. Have a safe trip back to Tassie, and I look forward to catching up later in the year.
Thank you.
All right, see ya.
Well, there you go. That was part two of Mark's LFG report. You must be exhausted after all that reporting and videoing and audioing and speaking to so many people, like Nathan from War of Supremacy, Kim from Good Games Publishing, the, what's his name again? David something or other from Grail Games, David Harding.
That Harding guy.
That really nice guy. You've got the Story Brewers. Who did the Alas for the Cruel Sea.
And the Jane Austen.
I have to get my mum a copy of that. She is mad for Jane Austen. You've got the Slinky Gibbon team. You've got, obviously, then the man himself, Charles Bishop, who has organised this for the last few years.
Yes.
And is obviously putting heart and soul and money into this. So it's great that he's doing that kind of thing for the Sydney tabletop scene.
Yeah, and look, a disclaimer. So LFG did cover the cost of my ticket into the venue.
Yep.
And they also covered my accommodation for the weekend. So that was lovely of them.
It was.
In the Bankstown Sports Centre, which, as I said, there is nothing like it on earth. It feels like a whole block. It's got so many bars and restaurants and poker machines and cinemas and more bars and more restaurants and this grand ballroom, which was a great location to have LFG. Now, Before I forget, I really want to thank and shout out to some people. So firstly, Richard, who's a listener better known as Norkel. He got in touch with me, said he wanted to play a game. I not only had a game with him, I had breakfast with him.
Mm-hmm.
He had a couple of mates, Shannon, Steve, and Peter. They were the guys I played Terraforming Mars with. Also, on the second morning, I played La Granja with them.
You
put something in your throat there? Yeah, that's right. Lovely, lovely guys. And amazingly, they were still interested in hanging out with me after they'd hung out with Trent last time.
There you go. No accounting for taste, is there?
And I think it was Steve, who was Trent's ex-flatmate, that they hadn't seen each other for 30 years and then, you know, ended up playing across a gaming table at LFG last year. So glad they came back again. And Scott, who's another listener, who played a game with me and with Martin Wallace. And also Martin and Scott and I went to dinner together.
There you go.
And Martin, I tell you what, you know, because you had dinner with him in Brisbane.
I did.
He's such an entertaining guy. He's got so many stories about so many companies and so many designers and so many people. He's worked with so many different people and companies across the world. It's fascinating. You just sit back and listen.
Yeah, do you ever? And boy, oh boy, is he one busy designer.
Well, he had four prototypes there. So he had a pirate game. It was like a fantasy pirate game with a bit of a role-playing element. He had another role-playing game, which was like quite a light role-playing game that I saw him at out. He had a mafia game, but not your sort of werewolfy mafia. This was like mafia where it's focused on the business that the mafia does and how to build business. We played that one. So Scott and I and a bunch of other guys, we played that one, which is quite good. Apparently he's doing that for Steven Bonacore from Stronghold Games, you know, who has Italian heritage and all that stuff. So it's a different take on a mafia game. And I swear he had all these cards in there that were based on real people, or were real people. And every time put a card down, like Martin had a little factoid about that person. So you can see this game with like black and white art of the actual people with flavor text. He's like an encyclopedia. So clearly when he designs a game, he does so much research. It was absolutely incredible. So I had a great time. And look, thank you so much to Martin. Thanks to Renee and his lovely wife, Martha. They played a game with me. And Renee is still king of the unheard games because he pulled out these games. I'd never heard of them before. I played this game with him, Rob and Run. It was like a co-op bank robbing game.
Okay.
Where you are like the mastermind and the minions. And the mastermind is telling you, you know, sort of giving you clues about what you need to do the bank robbery, and you've got to play the bids. Anyway, I'd never heard of it, but it was hilarious fun.
Yep.
I wanted to give a shout out to Tina, who she's one of the moderators of the Australian Board Gaming Community Facebook page, but she's also organising a board game cruise, or in fact has organised, because I think it leaves quite soon.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's too late to get on that one, but she's hoping to do that again. And Garth, if we only knew someone who worked in the travel industry that maybe could help her for next year.
Yeah, wow. I'll have to see if I know anybody.
Yeah. Hmm. And look, a huge, huge shout out to all the LFG volunteers who did an amazing job. You heard Charles mention how they went off to dinner at some stage to basically have a break, and the crowd just erupted in applause for them. They did a fantastic job. It was very welcoming, so smoothly organised. And look, there were some, Alan, I mentioned him before, he taught me Luxor, thanks so much to him. There were some other listeners, they probably didn't want to be seen with me, but, you know, just gave me a nod, gave me a wink, gave me a thumbs up, said hello, had seen the hoodie, and sort of thought, that guy looks like a celebrity, don't know who he is, but hey, I'll say hello. It was just so nice to be amongst such a friendly group of people.
Fantastic.
I had a ball, and as I said in the interview, I've already put it in my calendar for next year. Garth, you definitely want to come along. For me, it combined the open play of BorderCon, where, as I said, they probably had 300 or 400 people doing open play, but then you also had the stalls from the game companies, you had the stalls from the Indie Alley, they called it, with all the independent little publishers. Amazingly, and we're almost out of time, amazingly they had the Clask Australian Championships.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Where the winner, and like I didn't know this, otherwise I would have probably rushed off and entered it myself, the winner of the Clask Championships got a paid flight and paid accommodation to Finland to compete in the Clask World Championships.
That's crazy.
Like, how amazing is that?
That's pretty cool.
Heap of role-playing games that you could play all weekend, lots of demos. Like, it was just a totally packed weekend and awesome fun.
That sounds perfect. And only a couple of weeks after BorderCon. So, Mark, you must be a little bit tired now. So, on that note, your show is over, Mark.
Yep.
Hopefully next week, Leon and I will get to do something. So we've been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been episode 221. Thanks to Area 52, as always. We've got to go now and play some games. So Dice Men, over and out. Can you play us a song, please, Mark?
I'll do my best. I'm worn out here. I'm just about to fall over.
Well, we've been the Dice Men on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.